everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Dive. Last time, we said we didn't know when the next episode would be. Turns out, in exactly 7 days, the next week at the regularly scheduled time.
Yeah.
It's exciting. We're going to be talking about the LCK Finals, as well as a little bit of a scouting the enemy preview for MSI, for the LCK and the LPL.
Good title, right?
Mm. Yeah, and then we'll talk about solo queue and do some Twitter questions. How you guys doing?
Definitely good. For an update, we also know when the next one after this will be already.
Yes.
Because we do have some downtime, so it's going to not be until the 7th. Mm-hmm. That'll be our MSI preview. You know, build up a lot for that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited. You know, we're all very prepared. Jess got a couple balls of water. You got a smoothie and some water. I got coffee and some water.
Desk. I'm going to move.
We have a plethora of drinks. So, or is it plethora or plethora?
Plethora.
Plethora.
Whatever you want it to be.
There you go. Potato.
Plethora? So. Sounds like some nasty biological thing.
Maybe that's what I was talking about, Kobe.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm doing well. Got to play some Clash this past weekend, which was pretty fun, and probably talk about that a little bit. But
your plethora talk got me thinking about the cab driver I had coming back from MSI. I just need to tell the story now.
Okay.
He didn't speak English very well. And he was like trying to be conversational so that he could learn the language better. And he's like, it's very hot today. I'm like, yeah, but at least it's not hot and humid like in Miami. And he was like, sultry. And I'm like, what? I don't think that's the word you're going for. And he's like, no, sultry, S-U-L-T-R-Y. And I'm like, I'm gonna look this up. I don't understand what you're saying. And the first definition for sultry is hot and humid.
Wow.
So he actually had the perfect word to describe what I had just told him. And I was like, wow, you're right, but people do not use it that way.
Yeah,
that was very confusing.
That's what I was going to say. It's like, that may be the correct context, but I think if you wow, it's really sultry out today.
Yeah, people exactly. Will be like,
wait, what?
Yeah. But to that day I learned.
Yeah. It's one of those things where language, like the objective of the language is to communicate ideas as clearly as possible. So even if the original definition of a word is something different than how, you know, most people think of it.
Yeah.
You know, then that ends up not actually being the correct case.
Yeah, it was cool though. Anyway, LCK Finals is also something that I watched. What do you guys think of the series, Freak of Freaks versus Kingzone Dragon X? Personally, I was actually disappointed in the way Afrika ended up playing out the series. I felt like they were actually could have been much more competitive with them, but I didn't like both the way they played in game and especially the way they drafted in Game 4. But I can get into that later. What are your thoughts on the series?
I thought it was like, so yeah, I was somewhat disappointed with how Afrika actually played it out as well. I don't know like where exactly you stand on the drafting stuff. I saw them getting a lot of flack for not banning Kai'Sa, which like I kind of don't really agree with, just because I feel like it's actually so difficult to deal with Kingzone in picks and bans, because they have five players who can basically all play everything. And when you start looking at like the required bans, so to speak, it becomes very difficult because they don't want to deal with Peanuts Nidalee. They don't want to deal with Swain overall. You know, like his Olaf is pretty insane. Then you have things like Khan's Jace, and you have like all these sorts of power picks, and it becomes very, very difficult, I think, to really find like an effective draft where it's like, yes, you could ban Kai'Sa, but then if you give Khan Jace and he slams you there, then you're like, well, why wouldn't you ban that?
Well, I kind of disagree on that point, because if you're facing opponents that, you know, can play like any champion, like you're saying, I would then default back to my just overall power of champions currently. Mm-hmm. And Kai'Sa for me on that list was just, especially right here, because this is the super cheap Rage Blade, right?
Mm-hmm. This is patch 8.6.
And super strong Rage Blade. And I just have Kai'Sa as like extremely powerful, especially from the AD carry position. Meanwhile, the Nidalee and the Jace that you're mentioning, you know, we have multiple games here where, you know, Nidalee isn't banned. He still doesn't pick. He still goes for a tank or whatever. It's not like these are like mandatory bans. Plus Khan is always talking about, oh yeah, you know, he doesn't even practice Jace anymore. He's like, but I can just pull it out, you know, without even months of practice. But especially, okay, so there's that argument. But then also, well, one more is the argument that people have been giving a lot recently too, is like, if you got beat by something,
mix it up
multiple times in a row, you know, what's the downside of if you aren't able to counter it? Like, they already tried to counter it the second time around, didn't fail, and so like number three, you know, opens you up for a lot of criticism, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely like agree with like the thought process of, hey, if you keep losing to it, just change something up. But at the same time, I mean, Praise Ezreal is like pretty legendary, and that's basically what he was spamming the entire season, right? Like, he has 15 mm-hmm. picks on Ezreal. His next most picked was Varus at like 5 picks. So he had played very much like Ezreal and kind of more of this like supportive style, this survive type style. Like, so I can definitely see the argument for they're thinking, okay, well, they have not been practicing like this hyper carry protect the prey style as much in this split. Mm-hmm. Maybe that is a little bit like less comfortable for them and that sort of thing. So like, I can definitely see the logic pretty heavily.
Yeah, I can see the prep logic for sure, yeah. Especially because they were able to win game one and then they picked Varus over it in game two. But after seeing the way Prey was commanding that pick in team fights, I think that has to change by game three or four, where you're either willing to pick it themselves, which I think might be the bigger problem. Maybe they weren't as comfortable picking Kai'Sa, even though they played Kai'Sa earlier on, because they would first pick Sion over Kai'Sa. They had opportunities for it. But specifically, like Prey in some of these team fights would be locked on a tank, have an opportunity to ult in the bank line, in the back line, and basically like cancel an auto just to go do that and get the priority target. Like, how well he could see the whole fight and mm-hmm. actually navigate it on Kai'Sa was insane to me. That was actually the best Kai'Sa play I've seen. So I was very surprised that they didn't ban that, among other things.
I just think it's the pick to me. Like, I've played a lot of Kai'Sa. I've been spamming it.
Yeah, you know, it's super strong.
From the jungle is different. And I was like, yeah, like that's what Kai'Sa does. There wasn't actually a big moment where I was like, Prey, like no one else would have thought, you know, to be able to do that or whatever.
But he is incredible.
That's how you're supposed to play.
He's obviously an insanely good AD carry player. Mm-hmm. And you're mentioning all these other AD carry champions where, you know, why wouldn't you worry about his Ezreal? Why wouldn't you worry about, you know, mm-hmm. all these things? But let's go into the strategy with that a little bit more, because mm-hmm. they also talked about after this, we didn't have to show any more strategies because we literally just got to play, you know, this one strategy. Kai'Sa. And so they have a lot of, you know, things prepared for MSI. Kai'Sa as a champion, you know, everyone's like, oh, she's just OP. She does so much damage. Mm-hmm. She's actually even more OP in the way that they used it and drafted around it, because she has huge synergy with crowd control abilities.
Yeah.
A lot of her damage does come from that passive stacking mm-hmm. With the auto attacks. And if you can stack plasma with other champions, which all of these tanks do, yep. you know, they serve this double purpose. It's a very big, beefy frontline that also can stack your plasma for you and allow you to kill other tanks. So by turning the game into, well, the first one was like a 7-tank game or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. If you can turn the game into like a 7 or 8-tank game, Kai'Sa excels at killing tanks due to her passive and Rage Blade, and she also synergizes very well with tanks on her team. So I just thought that this was a very intelligent overall strategy by Kingzone mm-hmm. to incorporate a champion that is so strong right now in kind of the perfect conditions.
Especially game two, I think, was a perfect example of that, where that was the game that actually super slammed, and they ran Morgana, Sion, Sejuani, and Cho'Gath.
Yeah. Like, Black Shield and a bunch of tanks.
It's like, and all those guys apply CC so easily, so you're getting so many passive stacks from that. But I think it is pretty terrifying, like, you know, taking a look forward towards MSI at this team. We already knew that they were going to be one of the best, if not the best, team at MSI. Mm-hmm. And this just shows, like, this is just like another wrinkle that you have to be now worried about, right? Because they had not really been playing, like, obviously Prey can play hyper carries. He's done that in the past, but that has not been the style that they have been playing. And it's just yet another thing that you now have to be worried about, right? Like, okay, well, now maybe you have to ban the Kai'Sa every game, but they can get advantages in every lane. He's comfortable playing a secondary role. Like, they all play so many different things and play it so well that this team just becomes so terrifying, I think. Like, when, you know, people talked so much about Khan's Jason in the past, right? And he's able to get that in game four, right? In the pivotal game four, because there's all these other things that they can also do so well. I mean, he can play the tanks incredibly well. Like, Nidalee can play tanks. He can play the DPS. You can do all these different styles. You have your mid laner playing Sion and Taliyah, and like, there's just, they feel like they can just do everything, and it becomes just, how do you ever like have a winning draft against that? It feels almost impossible.
You were going to say something, Gobi?
Huh?
Or have
that is an incredibly difficult situation to pose a question. This yeah. is the best team in the world,
yep.
and they play all champions.
Yep.
So you're saying, how do you outdraft? You know,
well, I just mean it's almost rhetorical, right? It's like the answer is you can't, right? Like, and that's why they're so scary.
But my point was that I feel like basing a strategy around Kai'Sa right now is like one of the best strategies that you can possibly have. Really? And there is no replacement for a Kai'Sa as a champion.
Yeah.
You know, some strategies you can like, you know, throw a couple bans at this tank, but then, you know, there's another tank that could easily take its place, or, you know, there's another, you know, long range, you know, carry or something like that that can take its place. That, for me, there's nothing that can take Kai'Sa's place. I mean, I guess Vayne would maybe be the closest, and it's but not even,
it can't even do the same
it's
thing.
It's not similar at all, because you know, right?
So like that'd be the same thing, but it's not similar.
Exactly,
at all.
It's the closest thing, and yet the closest thing isn't similar, right?
I feel like, you know, Vayne can do somewhat similar things in team fights, maybe, but it's like her lane is so much worse. And one of the big things I think is so strong about Kai'Sa is that she actually has wave clear in the form of her Q compared to someone like a Vayne who has access to almost no wave clear. But yeah, I mean, I'm fully on board that like Kai'Sa is a really strong pick and is going to get a lot of bans in MSI and going forward. It's just more, I felt like on Reddit and social media, I saw a lot of like, oh, the reason they lost is ban Kai'Sa type thing.
It is,
and
among the reasons
and
they lost.
It's, it, you know, it can be counted in one of the reasons, and I think you can attack the draft, but I just think it's so hard to actually, you know, properly draft against Kingzone. And like Afrika had actually, I think, drafted really well throughout this season and throughout playoffs. You know, they got so much, their coaching staff got so much credit in the semifinals and these sorts of things for how well they were playing with, you know, Vel'Koz and Yasuo and finding ways to fit in all these unique picks.
And that's why I was disappointed, right? Because they consistently switched it up on teams in order to find advantages. Then they let Kai'Sa through four times, but I'm not even going to talk about that anymore. It's the fact that they have this Yasuo pick that Kuro's pulled out against Taliyah that works really well. And then in the deciding game, when Taliyah is blind picked, they pick Azir. They don't pick Yasuo. They don't try to build the team comp around that. They've never changed up the way the bottom lane is played. They're not pulling out any new lane counter picks, even if Afrika Freaks is first picking all of their solo laners. Like, they have actually been a team that is able to find counter picks in order to punish during the draft. Like, to get back to your earlier question, how do you actually attack Kingzone in a draft when you play everything? In the same way that you attack anyone in the draft. Like, you need to blind pick certain positions. You need to know what counter picks work for that. And you just need to try and find better synergies based on blue side, red side. And if you're blue side and blue side's advantaged, you use the advantages of blue side, right? And I just didn't feel like Afrika did that by deprioritizing one of the best picks in the meta and not using any of their counter picks efficiently. So, overall disappointed in Afrika in that series.
Yeah. I thought that their game one was really cool, though. You know, they had a lot of mobility from Tahm Kench, the Abyssal Voyage. They punished Peanut on his invade. And, you know, it got the series off. I was like, oh, sweet. Like, this is going to be a, you know, the hype series that we're looking for. And maybe, you know, as it develops, we're going to see more of the kind of unique picks. But
game three and four were also, like, fairly close. Like, game four actually felt like there was, like, a lot of things going for Afrika. Like, their Kramer was actually doing really well in the Kog'Maw. But, I mean, it was pretty clear that Kingzone was just the better team overall. Like, how they played the map, how they're able to execute on their comp. Like, they're incredibly strong. And I think, you know, regardless of who comes out of the LPL, Kingzone's the heavy favorites for MSI.
And then this was a question I liked. We also got it on Twitter from LolVolk26. Who would you replace on Kingzone if you could? And is there any player? It's essentially that theme of the question. People say, wow, every single player is good. I remember last year with Longju, when we were doing top 20 players at Worlds, we had four Kingzone members in the top six.
Yeah.
Like BDD was top six. Khan was number two. You had Praying Gorilla up there as well. Now they've added Peanut for Cuz. Is there a player right now where you can say, hey, sub this Kingzone player out, put in literally anyone in the world in that position and make them better? Or do you feel like they've actually had like the perfect team?
So my immediate thought is you can look on paper and be like, ooh, this guy's better on paper, but you don't know how it will work in the context of the team. So that becomes incredibly hard. But I mean, I could see people making arguments for like Score or Faker or something along those lines. But even then, like everyone on Kingzone now is performing so incredibly well that like, there's no like, oh yeah, that's the right choice, right? Like everything would be like arguable, perhaps. Like there's some that you could maybe argue individually, this guy's better, but can you say that, you know, Faker is going to perform better along with these players? You know, is Score really going to fit in as well with Khan and these sorts of things, right? Like, yeah, maybe it's better, but if it's better, is it even much better? Like the team is just ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would definitely say no. Like I wouldn't replace anyone.
Yeah.
Because to add on to Azale's points, we've seen how important, you know, teamwork and communication And when I say communication, oftentimes even I'm talking about like nonverbal communication. Like Prey and Gorilla have played together so long mm-hmm. that you don't, there's so many things they don't have to communicate, right? Yep.
Right.
If something happens in lane, you have to react, right? If someone's out of position, this is my opportunity for the all-in or whatever. There's no time for one of them to be like, let's all in now, or mm-hmm. hit him with the binding, give me the black shield or whatever. And that's a big reason why, like, I don't think replacements, maybe if you're saying you're looking 2 years down the line or whatever,
yeah.
or, you know, or a year down the line or
yeah.
something.
It depends how theoretical you want this question to be, because I think the closest analogy to this for me would be when the Golden State Warriors added Kevin Durant. So they had won 73 games in the previous year and lost in the finals, but 73 regular season wins was more than any other team had won in the history of the league. And then Kevin Durant's this free agent who is probably top three players in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And they just got to add him to the team. And people are like, whoa, oh my God, they're going to win 77 games. But they didn't, right?
Yeah.
They won like 66 or something. They won fewer games. And they did win the title at the end of the day. But you could clearly see that they had to learn how to play with this other amazing player on the team.
Yeah.
So I think in the immediacy, switching out BDD for Faker would actually make them worse in the short term.
Yeah.
But if I'm actually like the King's own GM and they're just like, yo, Faker wants to join. What do? You take him. You put him in over BDD 100%.
I would take him, but I don't know if I'd put him in over BDD 100%.
Not for MSI, but like yeah. it's in the offseason.
If you're looking if you're looking long term,
I take Faker.
BDD is really
He's incredible.
Good. He's good, and he's got a lot, but it's Faker.
Yeah, I mean
he's like 22. He's not over the hill. He's gonna be able to continue
that's
to
true.
Develop.
If anything,
I'm not sure if you heard, but he's Faker.
Yeah. Do you know who he is?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone like Uzi, I'd be more skeptical on only because of the synergy you have with the duo lane. But like yeah. even Smeb versus Khan, maybe right? Like, but or yeah. score for Peanut. I think I actually do that as mm-hmm. well. If I was trying to make the perfect LCK team, I think I'd take Score and Faker and add them to that team, and that's
yeah.
it.
I think the synergy point is really the best one, though, like about, you know, not wanting to replace something unless you're looking long term mm-hmm. to your point, because it is really crazy. And I'm not sure, like, if people realize how big of a deal it can be, like even just from my experience in WoW, playing with some of the, like, I played with a lot of people who were like the best or some of the best, and got to play with people from different teams and different regions and stuff. And like, it would be insane when I'd be playing against someone who I know is maybe the best in the world, their class, and I'm like, wow, their team is so amazing. And then you play with them and you just like lose every game, and you're like, I know you're really good, but you're not in the place I'm expecting you to be, and these sorts of things, like especially when you're playing with someone for years, like all these little things, like you said, the nonverbal communication, like you just expect them to be doing something that they're not, right? And mm-hmm. and that can completely throw you off, and you can lose to players who individually are actually quite a bit worse than you if they have better synergy, right? And I think that is the biggest argument for, like, you know, don't make any changes.
Yeah. But, you know, we did say you want to add something on King Zone first?
I was going to continue the King Zone conversation. What do you got?
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to move it on to, you know, LPL, but let's...
I want to do that in a moment, but now I want to say, okay, how do you beat King Zone? Because we're Team Liquid, or we're Fnatic.
How about UB? How about we're IG?
We're IG?
Yeah.
Okay, so what I do is I look at Longju and I say, how did Samsung beat them in last year's World Championship? Because it's 4/5 of the same team, and they got 3-0'd.
Yeah.
Malzahar was a big pick in that series. Control picks that could make quick plays and didn't have large amounts of counterplay were big as well. And I think on top of that, if they are to lose, which we don't expect them to lose, it plays a little bit off of their ego, willing to blind pick certain things with the thought of being able to outplay it, and then punishing them for that, because there's no draft you can have that is completely immune to counterplay or completely immune to outplay. So you hope that they're a little bit nervous on the stage. You take playmaking champions that can force things, and you go and do that.
Yeah, I like that point a lot, because the first game that they lost was because, it wasn't wholly because of, you know, catching Peanut on the invade, but they were quick to react to the tendencies of Kingzone.
Yeah.
And then when they got an early lead versus Kingzone, and Kingzone didn't get to do their normal, you know, rolling it forward and pressuring the game with the early lead that they're used to having. So I think that that's definitely a good one to bring up. And I mm-hmm. think that as we're talking about IG and like Invictus Gaming and their ways to try and take them down.
Right.
That's a super early game team. Like they've been snowballing out of control in LPL. And that might be an area where, you know, they could try and attack them.
Yeah. And just for context, we're saying Invictus Gaming because they only lost one game in the regular season. They're still needing to play semifinals and finals. So there's a lot that could happen.
Also, we're big rookie fanboys.
EDG as well usually does.
Thank you very much.
Have a pretty good playoff showing. There's a pretty good chance they play them in the finals. But there's still a lot of power. You got RNG in that finals, Rogue Warriors. Like there's good teams that are in the LPL.
It's definitely possible that they would lose, but it feels Kingzone-esque in that like they were so insanely dominant in the regular season. They crushed the top of the competition, you know, towards the end of the regular season. But either way, as far as like how you beat them, you know, I do like looking back to past failures that Kingzone, you know, has had. Like you're talking about Worlds, but at the same time, I felt so much of their Worlds failure was due to they're underperforming rather than Samsung's like incredible kind of like taking a part of their strategies, like looking at how BDD especially I think performed. He was a really big one that stood out as like he is making so many mistakes that he did not make during the regular season. So like them gaining that experience I think makes them more formidable than they perhaps were at Worlds last year. But I do think that, you know, playmaking early makes a lot of sense, and you have to try to play to their tendencies, right? Like, if you are, like, assuming IG makes it or whatever, when you have someone who is, like, the Shy, who is willing to play these incredible, volatile, like, carry versus carry matchups, if you can play to some of Khan's tendencies, if you can get him into, like, you know, a bad Jace matchup, like, have some sort of pick prepared, things like this, I think those are ways that you can actually take over a game, right? Because if Khan is going to play into that tendency, if he wants to play that sort of style, a Jace from behind is incredibly weak. And the Shy is like one of the few people in the world that I'm like, okay, well, you could probably actually play carry versus carry and maybe you could win. So I think you have to just try to play to your own strengths and try to like, you know, prey on the tendencies of Kingzone because there's so much, you know, documentation of how to play against this team.
IG, Kobe.
Let's go.
How do you beat IG? What's your profile of IG? I was hyping them up a little bit before. I'm a big Jackie Love fan, but it's funny because they don't actually really win through Jackie Love. They've been winning, I feel like, a lot through Rookie and the Shy having just huge performances. You look at what the Shy has played. It's like GP, Jace, Gnar, Vladimir, Camille. Those are all his most played. Potentially worrying if it is literally actually all Ornn and Sion now, but they've been destroying people.
So I was doing research on IG, even though, because we watched the LPL playoffs and IG hasn't played yet, but I went back to research them anyways, because we do expect them to at least, you know, be very heavy contenders for MSI representation. The Shy had a very good Ornn game versus Rogue Warriors in week 9. So he hasn't played nearly as much of the tanks as Duke and stuff. And for most of the season, it was like that sort of thing where Duke was doing that and Shy was playing carries. And they
also
know,
they have
the
Duke,
map.
Right?
But yeah, exactly.
Duke
I'm pretty sure
also pretty extremely good.
he's only played a little bit by comparison, though.
Yeah, yeah. But I do think, much like, you know, Khan has played some tanks as well. I think like the Shy, he looked just fine on the Ornn to me. There was like one mistake late game, but other than that, like he had really good roams. He had good team fighting with it, and that's a super small sample size. But me just seeing like one game like that where he represents it well, maybe like okay, you know, I'm not too worried about it. It's kind of the inverse of the Impact thing, where you know Team Liquid are going to be North America's representative. And a lot of people were like, oh my God, but it's going to be Conqueror and that's going to destroy all tanks and Impact's garbage on, you know, carry champions. You can only play tanks. First of all, I don't think that Impact can only play tanks. I think that he can also play the carry. You know, maybe he's going to get absolutely blasted by like, you know,
I mean,
Khan and Shy. Like, those are
actually going to
be like the most godlike top lane carry players. But I'm not, you know, quite as worried as people are making it out to be, especially since Conqueror did not actually end up, you know, removing tanks from the game or whatever and making all top lane matchups about carrying them. So it's definitely an interesting balance. I think one of the most interesting things also for Invictus Gaming was how quickly they're winning so many of their games. And they were like they were splitting up the map really well. So when I think about things to worry about, And I'm always thinking about it from the NA perspective, Team Liquid. It's like, how is Team Liquid?
Lots of things to worry
about. How is Team Liquid going to deal with
it? Lots of things. I got a list.
Yeah. I was like, all right, well, one of the biggest things is going to be how, you know, in a lot of these games, you know, you're seeing like four-man roams to one area of the map or five-man roams to one area of the map early on. And then continued, you know, constant switching of lanes after that. Mm-hmm. But it actually gave me confidence in, you know, our finals weekend when I saw actually a lot of movement from Team Liquid as well. So as long as they're not, you know, getting stagnant and they are willing to make like quick lane rotations, you know, covering lanes like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. They're definitely a long list, as Azale said, but...
I mean,
I have some hope.
IG with the Shy, to put it into perspective, is 32-2.
Yeah.
They're 5-3 with Duke and 32-2 with the Shy.
That's better win rate.
It's a little bit better. Yeah. It's over a 94% win rate with him. Like, so it is pretty absurd. Like, when it's funny when you're looking at the Shy's champion pool and you're looking at these things, he has so many 100% win rate champions, right? He's lost one game on GP and one game on Camille, and that's it, right? Like, everything else is just he's won every game. And one of the things that has really impressed me about IG is how willing they are to play these aggressive picks and, like, even like how cleanly they're able to execute on these plays that I had always kind of looked at as, like, oh, that's a really risky dive. That's a really risky collapse in these sorts of plays. But they have no hesitation on like these five-man bot plays. They have no hesitation on pulling the trigger on team fights, and they execute so incredibly well individually that it's really pretty exciting to watch them play.
Yeah, and that's one thing about the LPL is a lot of teams play like that.
Yeah.
Right? Their average game time was 6 minutes faster than the North American LCS. IG's average game time was even faster than the normal thing in the LPL. And a lot of times when you think about that style of play, you think, oh boy.
It's a coin flip.
Yeah, you're going to coin flip it. It's going to be risky. But then they have the highest win rate percentage in game score of all of the teams.
Yep.
Right? So they're doing these things in a reliable fashion, which is what makes me think they're such huge favorites.
Right. One of the things that you'll often see with teams that play super aggressive is that they are willing to take risky situations. But I noticed in a lot of the IG games, if they would start early Barons, but they would almost always have it looked like such a clear decision. They're like, as soon as this guy roams over or whatever, we're instantly pulling off. Like, mm-hmm. We're going for the catch. There weren't any moments that I have found where they were hesitant and they're like, oh, maybe we should finish it. Oh, let's burn it down. Oh, let's 50-50. Uh-huh. They're almost always like, we have complete vision coverage, or, you know, we have X people killed, or we're immediately turning. This guy's going to come here. It felt like while they were aggressive early, they like didn't play around with the big objectives, and they were much more secure with those. So.
Yeah,
that made it more scary. Do you want to talk about the actual playoff games that we got to see, though?
Definitely.
Because we're talking so much about IG, they're not, you know, guaranteed to be the representative.
Yeah, I watched like a lot of the RNG games. That's mostly what I focused on. Mm-hmm. You know, I watched their round one as well as their quarterfinals series. You know, against WE and against Snake. Because that's kind of like now going to be the semifinals against IG. So while RNG, I think, definitely did impress like fairly well in their playoff run, like I also had watched their regular season games against IG, and that's kind of concerning. But the big thing that was standout for me throughout RNG's playoff run is how incredibly well Xiaohu has been playing. Like, this guy was such a monster for RNG throughout the playoffs, and it was really cool. Like, even it was kind of funny. I was watching one of the games. It was actually against WE, so they're round one, and he's playing Zoe into his ear, and I'm watching this game, and I'm just like, Jesus, Xiaohu is actually just solo winning this game. And you look at the scoreboard, and he's 0-0-0. He's up 5 CS, but the amount of pressure he was actually putting out and chunking people out that is getting them a turret, chunking people out that is getting them a dragon or an objective, like, he was just taking over a game in a way that wasn't showing up on the scoreboard, and was really, really impressive to me. And like, he had some incredible swing games throughout the playoffs, but Xiaohu is as good or better than ever, and like, he's a monster.
Yeah, even last year at Worlds, I remember we ranked Xiaohu like super high. I think he was the highest non-Korean player at Worlds, and then you looked at his numbers from Worlds and you're like, meh, his damage percentage isn't super high. Like, his KDA is pretty good. But I agree with you. That's just kind of the type of player he is, where he impacts a lot of the map. Also, something to keep in mind with RNG, even though their playoff series were close, is that they played before their Lunar Revel break, which is kind of halfway through the season. Uzi wasn't playing at all. So that's why this team was a lower seed going into the playoffs. They were actually, I believe, 8 wins, 10 losses in game score without Uzi, and then 24-10 with Uzi since he's come back. So he is still, like, Xiaohu's good, but Uzi is also the one that helps put them over the top.
Yeah, and I was, when we were listening to the playoff one, I can't remember if it was round one or round two, but they were talking about, I think it might have been Raz or some one of the casters.
The one we were watching yesterday?
Was saying, I don't remember if it was the round one or round two, but they were talking about Uzi had like an 18 CSD at 15 minutes or something like that. And I was like, Jesus, that's crazy. Especially considering like they're playing in China with all these like Jackie Love, you know, super young, you know, prodigy AD carries or whatever. And I was like, God damn, Uzi, like...
Wait, that's not fair.
I don't know, the last time I heard... Whenever you hear, like, double digits or something with CSD, you're like, wow, that's, like,
it's really high.
Impressive. But 18 is, just extreme lane bully type of numbers. And then when we were watching, definitely at least the round one, the games were actually a lot slower than we expected. And they played the games a lot more kind of calmly too. So again, I feel like
3 minutes slower average game time than IG for comparison.
So I feel like people, you know, throwing in the teams into these kind of buckets where you're trying to classify them super simply. Everybody always wants to like profile a team and take the easiest kind of route to be like, oh yeah, that's they're the early game team. They always do X or whatever. There's definitely opportunity for surprise here.
Yeah, I mean, they can play the style that fits like within each game, right? Like against WE, that was a really slow series. That was the round one. Against Snake, their games were fairly fast. I mean, 31, 30, 33 minutes, 34 minutes, and they had one that was 42. So those are all pretty quick. And it was a fairly dominant series against them. Like, there were opportunities, it felt like, for Snake to kind of come back and actually take some games. I felt like game two was pretty competitive, but like overall, RNG was kind of clearly the better team. There was definitely some funny moments though too. We were actually watching, I think it was game one, the Olaf invade, game one of the quarterfinals. MLXG. MLXG goes for a blue buff invade, level one. He walks in and just like...
They see him so it's 3v3 at the blue buff for people.
He sees the enemy team, they see him, he gets like hit by Tahm Kench, he's like, nah, I'm just gonna still do the blue. And he just starts hitting it, doesn't smite, gets killed immediately, loses it, then Uzi has to flash away because the Trundle gets it and gets pillar. Then Trundle immediately walks over to his Raptors, gets seen by Xiaohu walking in, the Swain, continues to just go onto the Raptors after being spotted, immediately dies to MLXG's Olaf.
Who just respawned and ran
and kills him, gives him the blue buff, and then he proceeds to just run over the game. And I'm just like, what is this start? Like, it was just...
There are definitely mistakes, right?
Oh, there are some mistakes.
These teams are definitely not perfect. But, like, I feel like even you describing that situation at blue buff, like...
It would look
people,
a bit more silly.
Yeah, people like don't understand like how hilarious it was because they were literally standing right next to this Olaf. And he's like getting lower, so
he's getting shot.
Maybe he was thinking like, oh yeah, more attack speed or whatever. I'm gonna finish this blue buff. But it just looks so funny because the Tahm Kench is just literally right next to him, auto attacking him, and he just auto attacks him to death. And you're like, oh, he's dead now.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because like RNG got Karsa, right? And like Karsa was supposed to be this big upgrade. You know, over MLXG, and people are like, wow, like now they have a consistent jungler and they're going to be way better, but they're still using MLXG. Like, and MLXG has these super high moments and he has super low moments. I mean, that was super boneheaded play. Game three was the only game they lost in the series, and he went double Hunter's Talisman on Gragas and is just like down almost two levels against the Sejuani, who's just slamming him in the early game, like after his wrong purchase and everything. Like, he was already behind, then he bought the wrong item, and he gets even more behind. behind, and you're just like, Evan, like, gee, come on, buddy, like, get it together. But then he pulls off like some really nice plays, and he does have very high moments, but it still feels very much like MLXG from Worlds, where he's you never know what you're gonna get, right? He's gonna pull off the sickest play in the world, and then he's gonna immediately like walk into a tower, flash into a wall, and die.
He's a jungle hero, but he does have a tragic flaw.
Yeah,
and that's gonna be I'm excited to see them in the playoffs, like against IG.
Yeah,
right. Because it could be Carsa or MLXG that played. Carsa's actually played 4 more games than MLXG, I think. There's a 4-game difference between how much they've played during.
But MLXG has been the only one playing in the playoffs, which makes me feel like they're more confident in him. Yeah. Another thing that was kind of fun to me was watching some of the builds and stuff in the Snake versus RNG series, like. Vladimir, they were doing Shirelia's rush every game, and so they picked it a couple times on Snake side, and they were doing like the 10% CDR talent. They go Shirelia's into a Fiendish Codex and Lucidity Boots, and off of like under 4K gold, they're at 40% CDR.
Yeah.
And then they actually just sit on the Fiendish Codex, and we're going straight into a death cap, and then coming back later for Azonia's, and it actually seemed like a really really strong build, and made me kind of want to mess around with it because Shirelia's is just like. So good on Vladimir. It's the health, it's movement speed, it's AP, and it's CDR, right? Yeah. It's like the perfect Vladimir item, and it just seems like it's kind of replaced Protobelt in that build and actually seemed more effective.
It's movement speed and on-demand movement speed, right? Like it's both. It's not just the active item.
Yeah, passive movement speed, yeah.
I think this is probably better suited for the patch segment and solo queue, but I think Shirelia's is a really good item in general. Mm. It just doesn't have many champions that it fits on. So I'm like, I'm constantly trying to find champs that the item makes sense. I think it makes sense on Singed and Vladimir, obviously. But I also think it's good on like Ivern. I think Bard is good with it. I don't know if Karma is good with it because it's a little, you already have such amazing team movement speed already with the pick, but that and Twin Shadows are actually really, really good items now that they've kind of been moved away from the support line. But that's a bit off topic. I think whenever I see Reverie, I get a little bit excited.
It is kind of cool. I actually saw Swain playing with it the other day, too, and it actually worked pretty well. Essentially, like, it was Phase Rush and
it
that.
It makes sense, yeah.
And it was kind of just, like, he would pop that run into the middle and then proc Phase Rush, and he'd just, like, be zooming through the
fight. A lot of champions that don't necessarily need the mana but want those stats.
Yeah.
It's a very small subset of champs, but when you hit it, it works so well.
It's pretty interesting, but there's one of the things, like another thing, and this is kind of like a little bit off specific topic, but like something that always bugs me about pro play is how underprioritized healing debuffs are. And it happens in the NALCS, it happens in the LCK.
You mean just something that bothers you about all games of League of Legends?
Yeah.
Because no one in solo queue builds that stuff either.
Yeah, well, I do in my game. Because...
No, but he expects more from the pro game.
Solo queue is like, whatever.
Yeah, it's a bunch of...
It's true, right?
But you got to get your third Zeal item before the executioner is calling.
So in game two of Snake RNG, so Snake is running Vladimir, Trundle, and Swain.
Those champions don't hit.
As well as an Ezreal who has lifesteal and then Alistar. So, like,
At like 4 minutes in, Azale turns to me and he's like, if somebody doesn't buy like the first or second item executioner, I'm not watching the rest of this game.
Yeah. And I watched the rest of the game. A, I was a liar. And B, the game ended at 33 minutes and no one had a Morelos, no one had an executioner's, no one had any form of healing debuff. On RNG side, and they won the game, but that's not the point.
they didn't need it.
You would have won the game more easily. I mean, the amount of healing coming out is actually insane. I don't understand why people refuse to spend 800 gold. I mean, the worst part of it was when Uzi already had like his 3 items, and he buys a Hex Shrinker, and he has another Longsword. I'm like, oh, finally! Like, it's not even good to upgrade the Maw. That's an executioner's for sure.
Yeah.
And they upgrade the Maw. And I'm just like, come on, man. Give me something.
He wanted the CDR from the Caulfield's Warhammer.
Yeah, he did. All right, that's all I got. But please, build Executioners. It's so much better than Lord Dominic. Again, it seems like that. It's actually insane.
Yeah. I think it is funny. You're about to say, it's not even funny.
Yeah, I think that was funny. That was funny.
People just need to look at the item as far as like effective damage that you're dealing. People all look at it. Like I even had this conversation with Stixay, and he's like, yeah, but Lord Dominic's feels so good because your numbers are bigger. I'm like, yeah, but if a Vladimir is healing for 1500 and you apply healing debuff, you have to look at it like you just dealt 750 damage. That's insane.
We need to have numbers for the healing denied.
Exactly.
With a big frowny face that pops up over the enemy champion.
I like it. Then people would buy it because it's actually OP.
Yeah. You know, Reckless doesn't almost ever build Last Whisper items. Yep. You notice that?
I have noticed
everyone
that.
Else builds Last Whisper and Reckless just nah.
I like how Reckless just buys as much attack speed as early as possible too.
Zerk agrees.
He's like, give me all the daggers time. Too, and he's like, one more dagger, hell yes. and then he actually like makes use of it. Like it's really.
I like it for how he plays actually.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I really enjoy it because it is unique, and he's obviously extremely successful with it. But like. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to maximize those, attack speed breakpoints, right? Mm-hmm. He's still moving in the small times where, you know, there's downtime on his auto attack.
All right, let's talk about patch 8.8 as well as solo queue and all
Clash.
That stuff.
Clash, are we going to hit? Oh, yeah, Clash.
And Clash was, if you let me finish my sentence, I would have gotten there. but yeah, sure. Kobe. You played Clash. I didn't get to play in the beta weekend. What did you think?
So did Azale, I think.
Yeah, I did.
How'd it go? Did you play Saturday and Sunday and win the championship?
So mine was an unlucky experience because we tried to queue Friday and the servers were just exploding because everyone was trying to do it.
Okay.
So it wouldn't actually let us like update that we had tickets and lock in. So we didn't get to do it on Friday. So I played on the Sunday. And it was still fun, but if you don't start on Friday, you only get to do the two games, and then it just ends.
Yep.
So it didn't feel, to be honest, that epic to me. Mm-hmm. I think I'm much more excited to do it if it's, like, the full thing. We went 1-1. It was fine.
Who did you play with?
I played with Clark, Jules, Abe, and Steven Zhang. I don't know if you know him, but...
Okay, so you guys are all, like, pretty, like...
Yeah, so Clakey D, MIA, just so people can decode what you're saying.
Yeah, we were playing in, like, couple, tier one or whatever and stuff, and it was okay. I think we should have won both our games. We went 1-1. But it was fun, and I did like the pick ban thing. Like, I do like... I really enjoy that side of the game. I would like if you could... actually just like inspect their profiles kind of thing, like off of that little pick band
sheet.
Do
you get the champ rules or do you also get the player names?
Like, you get their names. You can OPGG.
So you can.
Well, when we did it, OPGG like would be down a lot because it was
everyone
on the first day, everyone was doing it.
So if I go to Law King, man. Yeah,
it got better later, but you do have to also worry about increased traffic on the sites.
It shows essentially their ranked champions, their win rates and stuff, and KDAs on it. And then you can click to another tab and see mastery points, which was pretty cool.
That's cool.
I actually thought it was really good. It was funny because both the games that teams played against us, they like completely like misbanned because like I play mostly only Phil, right?
Yeah.
And some of the other people had been playing different roles than what they were playing.
You don't play much ranked. Was it showing just champ mastery then?
It shows champ mastery and it shows the rank.
So were they banning like your kindred and stuff? Or
yeah, like so people were banning stuff for roles that I wasn't even playing because I have high mastery on I have high mastery on Kale and
because it doesn't have like normal game stats
and Swain
ranked and champ mastery.
Yeah.
Okay.
And like you can OPG the person and stuff like that. Like Volibear got banned because I've been playing a lot of Volibear before, and like you know, and then they were banning the guy who was playing mid for us had been playing a lot of AD carry, so he was playing Kai'Sa and Varus, so they're banning Kai'Sa and Varus a lot and stuff too, right? So it's kind of funny how that worked, but I really enjoy that process. And Clash does feel like more intense than ranked because there's
it's definitely more intense.
Yeah, I was jealous.
Yeah, I saw you having some sad times.
Kobe, let me know how it went.
So I played with a bunch of my like Discord group friends.
Yeah.
And we're all like really competitive, and our spread of rankings is
pretty big.
From high masters down to platinum. The way they explained it, the matchmaking working to me is that it uses like the higher end of if you have like one person who's high rated or whatever, then you're going to get matched against people like around that rating rather than, you know, the bottom.
Once you're in tier one, does it still try and matchmake your first round?
I think it does.
So I know is my personal experience, and we were against Challenger Flex people who like it would show the borders or whatever, and they would either be Challenger Flex or Masters in solo queue, like for all of them. And so like this is my like group of friends, and we're all like really good friends, but we're also like very competitive. Usually when we play together, we're just trolling around. Like Flex queue compared to Clash is so different for us. Like Flex queue, we're like nobody cares, right? And we're all just trolling, even though it's technically like a rank thing, and we still win. But it got, as soon as we lost like our first Clash game, it got like super intense and super awkward because like we have like one person's girlfriend is on our team and like everyone's just like trying and I made like a big mistake in one of them. I felt so bad afterwards because I felt like I'm letting them down. I'm letting my friends down. I don't know, the seriousness with which people take it definitely was felt. And we had fun and like we're probably gonna play more, but it was like afterwards it was definitely a serious like we had like 4 hours afterwards where they were arguing about different mistakes and what to do here and what these sorts of corrections.
Because like
we're all like
you're
very
down to
competitive
just do it again and win the game.
So it's interesting because it's like the people that I was playing with are obviously like a lot more trolling, Like Clark and like
He's never good care.
Yeah, like I mean in Rumble he cared in Rumble, and so like our internal tournament, but I don't think he super cared about this, right? He was playing kind of more jokey and doing silly things and whatever. And I think it's interesting because I do think if you're gonna do Clash, you should do it with people who have the same level of like. Try hard.
You need the same level of engagement.
Yeah,
across
because if you have a Kobe who's like, this is life or death,
I wasn't even the most competitive about it.
Well, but you know what I mean. Like, if you have someone who's super try hard, and then someone's like, haha, I'm gonna do Braum AP jungle, and then, you're probably not gonna have a fun time.
Yeah.
But it did feel really cool. One thing that is kind of. I mean, it only affects like a tiny portion of players because what, like under 1% is diamond or something like that, or 1% is diamond. But essentially, when you are like in tier one, I kind of came to the realization that, oh, I'm never going to win Clash ever. Like, that's never going to happen because for me to actually win, like, I essentially would have to like beat Team Liquid. It's like,
yeah, or Immortals because that's what they queued with. They queued with Cody Sun and I think Flame.
Yeah. Like, it's, yeah,
that,
it's
does it ever get all the way up to that level though?
Because it does.
There are so many. Oh, really? So, like, if you're in tier one,
it's a 512 team bracket. That's the thing.
If you think about the filter, because it's four games on the first day. It's an 18 bracket on Saturday, and then it's a 16 team bracket on Sunday. Mm. And the 16 team bracket is filled with people who have won their brackets on both Friday and Saturday. So, like, you'll have to basically beat a pro team if you want to win tier one.
Assuming they're still playing, right? Like, because it's like you have to win 9 straight games. And so, I do think it tries to match on MMR once you're within your tier. Because I did go back and I actually watched a lot of the pro teams playing or the super high elo ones. I watched Stunt and a bunch of people playing, and I watched the like Smithy group playing, and I watched a few different groups. Cutie Pie and them too, they all seem to match full challenger solo queue teams in game number one.
Because our opener was not
too much luck.
So that is like every group that I watched, and I watched like 5 or 6 groups, they all match challenger versus full challenger in game number one. So it's definitely trying to match MMR within the group so that like your Diamond 5 group does not get have placed against a Worlds team in the first round of Clash. Right.
But if your Diamond 5 beats the Diamond 1 team and then they beat a Masters team, then you're probably going to have to face the challenge.
You will, right? Eventually. And I was just like, holy crap. So the skill gap, like if you're at tier two, it's like, ooh, it's like maybe the very bottom of Diamond to like Plat or whatever. And you're like, okay, that's a fairly big gap. But then you look at tier one and it's like, D5 versus Worlds.
I'm never going to win.
Like you actually have to beat Worlds teams if you want to win Clash.
I understand that there's that realization, but I also think
still
it's kind of cool,
right?
Like you're never getting that experience normally, right? And because those teams just aren't playing, you're never going to match up with them in solo queue. And even when you lose, there's still ways to like re-enter the bracket at later days, so you can still have like an outcome of your Clash games.
And it's fun and it's competitive. Like I see myself probably doing it like every time because I really enjoy that stuff. Yeah. I enjoy playing with a team a million times more than solo queue. I'm always down to do group ranked, but I hate playing by myself. I just don't enjoy it. So this is really fun.
It trains different skills too. And I think it's really beneficial to, get an eye into the competitive again, right? Because we talked about communication like all year long so much. And it's such a different game. Trying to focus and come up with proactive plans like in the future, set up plays while also communicating to everyone on your team and like doing all that without everyone getting lost and like forgetting what they're doing is super difficult.
It's way different than like, even like flex ranked and these sorts of things. Maybe it's a high level flex rank. It becomes more similar or whatever, but like, solo queue especially, it's massively different because like we get to play Riot Rumble, like, and that feels kind of more similar to this, where it's like, it is not necessarily, it's obviously not as high level of competition as, like, you know, the LCS teams and all that, but just along the lines of like playing towards win conditions and playing with a goal for your team mm-hmm. seems to matter much more, because the kind of dives and stuff that you would maybe try to pull off in solo queue are responded to much more quickly, because the teams are all in voice, the teams are trying really hard and being serious mm-hmm. in these sorts of things. So you have to really play like where your team is strong on the map. You have to play like much more intelligently, I think, in that style of game when everyone is trying to be very organized. Everyone is trying to be very proactive and communicate. So, I totally agree. It tests a different level of kind of, or a different set of skills, which is really cool. And a lot of my friends actually were saying after playing this, it was motivating them to learn new champions. Mm-hmm. Because I know a lot of people who play like one champion or two champions, mm-hmm. and they got banned every game in Clash. And so this was kind of like their motivation to like have a broader champion pool. And I think that's kind of cool to see that changing people's outlook or approach to the game.
That's what I hope happens as well, because right now, going outside of your small pocket of champions is almost only punished within our systems. If you're going to learn a new champion or new role, you're going to just drop Elo and you're going to feel bad. And then you're not going to want to play that and you're going to go back to your core champs. But when you can actually have the reward showing with like a better class showing, mm-hmm. once this launches and goes out, I think it'll be cool. I'm jealous that I didn't get to play. I went up to San Francisco this weekend, so I'll get in there next time.
But you got to go to a dog meetup.
I did. There were lots of Shiba Inus.
How many dogs did you get to pet?
Many. Many dogs.
And
many
I only won one Shibas. Clash game. I only got to play two.
Yeah, that's like nothing.
I won two Clash games, but I you played lost all 3 days.
Oh, that's unlucky. I don't even know if that deserves that deserves a pat on the back.
Yeah.
That's a
yeah. You tried.
But because we went 0-2 the first day, so everyone like that's why we were talking afterwards for like hours and hours. Oh. Everyone was like,
"You had to."
Should
do,
the team even
to
stay together? So did then we make some roster.
But the
swap?
Next day, I was like, "I just want to win one game."
Yeah,
and we won a game. I was like, "Yeah,
we did it,
man!"
I got a banner.
Yeah.
You get a banner for that?
Yeah.
Going 0-2 and then winning a game?
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, it just sticks. I don't know if it's a default banner for participating.
Is it like a participation?
Well, you tried.
We did win. And then, like, when we won, I think it's like your first win, you get bonus victory points or something.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it, like, filled up the whole circle or whatever.
Oh.
Points. I don't know.
Anyway, patch 8.8. I want to talk about that because it's a decently sized patch.
Oh, yeah.
These changes will be in there for MSI. There's a lot on the docket. And we've already been talking for a while. So what are your standouts of this patch?
I would say overall mid lane to me. There are so many mid lane changes. I mean, they're nerfing some of the big ones like Talia and Galio. Then they're reverting a lot of stuff for Ahri and LeBlanc. Ryze got some hefty mana nerfs. I feel like there are so many changes to mid lane that that's going to change competitive for MSI a little bit.
Azir Wave Clear got hit fair bit as well. Mm-hmm. You know, 15% off of like on rank 1W off of the non-primary target, so like the splash and stuff. So they're definitely, it feels like, trying to bring back some assassins, you know, essentially mostly a revert on LeBlanc's rework. Ahri got some updates, so like those two champions could be coming in. And Ahri was something that was really interesting. We were talking about this a little bit earlier, and I was reading through the patch notes, and when I got to Ahri's Foxfire change, so it's okay, it's down 10 mana, great. But the thing that really actually stood out to me is new. Foxfire prioritizes any enemy champion affected by Charm's damage amp and the target Ahri most recently basic attacked within the past 3 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, like, is there a world in which you actually are just maxing W or something like this, and you're literally just autoing your opponent and pressing W? Because if that means all the Foxfire charges will now just hit this person every time instead of just kind of being arbitrary, like hitting whatever is near, that seems like really strong trading, especially for how short of a cooldown the W is. It could even, it kind of was making me think, oh, well, like, what about, you know, Lichbane Gunblade type builds and these sort of like semi auto attack focused builds that we've seen LeBlanc do in the past? You know, maybe something like that could actually be really effective on Ahri, and not only in lane, but in like a split push type style.
Maybe you'd have to get an auto attack range, which is not super long for Ahri, but that's something I'm going to try, especially, and we need to figure this out, whether or not 3 Foxfires triggers the move speed for Ahri, mm-hmm. because if you have to also end a queue, that gets tougher. I want to look at the trinket change, though, because Sweeping Lens is just gone, and you only have Oracle's Alteration as your red trinket now, which is the upgraded one that is just a way better sweeper. you can cover half the river with it rather than just one brush all the way from early game. So I think junglers can switch over to that earlier on, get more vision denial. Supports can switch over to that earlier as well for more vision denial.
Yeah.
I think it actually has a pretty large implication on how much vision you can actually clear out early in the game.
One of the things I think is actually really powerful about that is I think it means jungle priority matters a lot more. So I think if you're playing something that you're very confident that if you run into the other jungler, you will beat that in a duel, then going sweeper first, just starting sweeper, actually seems pretty powerful to me. Because like as a top laner, if my first trinket ward in the river just gets swept at like level three, what do I do, right? Like, I haven't gone back to base yet. My trinket ward isn't going to be off cooldown. You now have to, like, live in this world of fear where it's like he could just be sitting in that brush after he swept it. And these sorts of things are extremely scary, which means maybe tanks get pushed a bit more out as well, because tanks usually are kind of the weaker dueling junglers. And some of those kind of damage junglers, like especially like a guy like Graves maybe who's getting buffed and buffed and buffed, could be even stronger.
Yeah, and I feel like it's almost getting to the point with this change where there's more vision removal than vision to put down. There's no more trackers. You can't buy green wards, and it takes a while. Even if junglers are building Targons and are going to try and get a quest, like that's going to take a while.
Late.
Jungler quests are super late, and support quests aren't even
like 12 minutes. Aren't even
that
pretty
quick.
Normal. 10
yeah,
to 12
so
minutes.
Like you can have super high, you know, removal before you can even put down like a lot of wards, and so most of the wards I see just being control wards, and it's going to be maybe put an even higher emphasis on always getting control ward on every back for you, so you can have that bit of safety if everyone's going.
I think you have to
Oracle's Alteration so early.
Pick champions can become a lot stronger perhaps early as well, right? Like things like Blitzcrank, that like if it's easier now to maintain bush control, champions like that when they're out of sight are a lot more dangerous, can be really scary. So I'm interested to see like how people are going to actually kind of capitalize on that. But I definitely am expecting to see some people start sweeper, especially I think if you can play an aggressive jungler, it just seems super advantageous. So I think it's a pretty interesting change. And I do like it though for the game overall, because it didn't really feel like starting sweeper made almost any sense. Like, there's some really niche situations, right?
That trinket
like,
sucked.
I would never buy a sweeper before level 9, because I was like, this is just like a garbage version. I don't want a piece of garbage trinket. But then I would oftentimes also forget to switch over after I was level 9, and people were like, come on, where's the other sweeper? And I was like, oh, my bad. I forgot.
Yeah. I mean, at support, it's like you buy it when you get your sights down, right? That's basically when people do it. And then there's like some really niche things, like to stop Shaco's starts, you can do that. Like, you know, you can actually sweep a box at level
Nidalee
1
as well.
And Nidalee and some things, right? But like in general, there was no real use for it. So I think it's cool if you actually get some difference in some people are actually starting sweeper. You know, I would like to see Blitzcranks and stuff starting sweeper, see how that works in lane, right? Like how effective is that going to be? Maybe it's enough of an upgrade to actually make, you know, some more people kind of have this conscious choice.
I'm also curious to see what happens with LeBlanc. It's tricky because it's been so long since old LeBlanc has existed. It's what feels like a full revert to the assassin change that happened in the mid lane update like years ago. Basically distorting in, pressing Q, and then alting to press another Q again does a substantial amount of damage, which wasn't the case before. She can very quickly go in and out. Now it has 0.2 seconds from finishing the dash before you can reactivate distortion. Also, distortion does damage again. So if you really wanted to try and do that, like double distort bomb, you can start doing that stuff again. But so much of this, to me, depends on the numbers of it. Like, can you wave clear somewhat with distortion? That's going to be really important with all the mid laners shoving in. And can you be a viable assassin threat with this essentially ranged poke, which is what I think the old LeBlanc used to be able to do, is jump in, take half the 80 carries health, jump out. And what can they actually do against that?
Yeah, because it's so the mimicked Q and E, the orb and the chain, are the two highest damage ones. But those also both have back-end damage. Like, you have to either reproc the Q or you have to wait for the second part of the chain to hit. But both of those are going to do, you know, over 600 base damage. The distortion, when you mimic that, is still going to do like 450.
450 with a 0.75 AP ratio.
And it's instant.
Yeah.
So, like, if you want to get the maximum damage, then, or you want to get another chain route, then those are the options to go with. It's going to be very, I feel like it's good. Just my initial reaction. I feel like those sound like, you know, substantial numbers to me. Mm-hmm. In addition to the thing I hated the most in the whole game previously was LeBlanc's original passive, because ganking her is so frustrating.
She goes poof.
She's invisible. And the other clone popping out now. So,
well, good thing you had that upgraded sweeper. Just see where she's running.
That's true. That's actually true. Yeah. I'm going to be taking that thing a lot. But when I saw that passive coming back, I was like, God damn it. LeBlanc's going to be everywhere. It's frustrating ganking her. And I feel like her burst damage is substantial.
I especially think one of the probably actually the most common question I get on Twitter is like, when are we going to see assassins back? Do you think we can see assassins? Will there be assassins in MSI? Mm-hmm. Like, it's all people want to see assassins in the game. They think it's fun to watch. I tend to agree. It can be like more risky. It's kind of high conflict generally. And with a lot of these nerfs that you're looking at, it's like, okay, wave clear nerfs, mana nerfs on Ryze, and Taliyah and Azir and these sorts of champions, Ignite being buffed, you know, last patch or a couple patches ago now, recently, and then, you know, potentially a stronger LeBlanc and Ahri and these sorts of champions coming back in. Like, I think all these changes, it's not just that it's being reverted, it's everything in combination, certainly could push a champion like LeBlanc to the forefront. And getting to watch, like, a top-tier LeBlanc is one of the most fun things, I think, in the game. While it's not fun to play against, I think it is really, really exciting. You know, thinking back to, like, Faker and his dominance on the champion and those sort of players, like, at that elite level.
And I asked for a bunch of Twitter questions before the show. Jarge sent one in, who's the Team Liquid analyst. I don't actually have the exact wording of the tweet, but he's essentially asking, like, do you think with all these mid lane changes, we will see a change from the like mid lane auto shove roaming out to something else? And to kind of get back to your assassin point, assassins have been so disenfranchised with all the things we've done to the game. Because the initial assassin rework was like, okay, we're going to make it so that they take longer to kill you. They're not going to instantly pop you. It's like a 2 or 3 second delay. And then at the start of this year, we gave everyone a free Zhonya's. So it's like, oh, if the assassin's going to kill me, boom, I'm going to be able to Zhonya's. Locket also had a powerful active shield. That's nerfed as well. So like stopwatch is nerfed. You're not seeing it nearly as much with what people are taking in their runes. Locket is seen less and less because everyone's running Zeke's and Banner. So there is a higher chance that you can see assassins because of the changes that have been done. But personally, I think there's still enough wave clear roam champions, and until AD carries get to a point where they can actually be assassinated and they are not the most reliable in every game once you hit a certain amount of gold backline damage dealers, we won't see assassins, because it's still all about like either getting your front line to a point or your backline to a point to win the team fights.
Over the past couple of years, like whenever we talk about team fight comps, that always means tanks in the front line, protection for the AD, and like some sort of backline mage, right? But what if we get to the point where a team fight comp has to be further detailed as either it's this protect the AD carry composition with tanks, or it's a dive comp? Like, how long has it been since we've had success of actual dive comps, right? Like,
yeah, that's forever.
I feel like that's so far in the past. But if we get to the point where you see not only assassins, but things to synergize with the assassins for diving in and getting that kill, then that becomes a really fun addition to the, you know, the book of strategy for teams to kind of peel through. Because we have synergies between protect AD carries and stuff. Those are very simple and those are very apparent. But if we have people going for the synergies the other way and trying to accelerate the dives, then you know, that would definitely be fun.
I'm hopeful to the question as far as like, you know, are we going to see mid lane change? Because I do think that vision, like vision denial, also benefits assassins. So if you're removing some of the mages wave clear, you're removing some of their safety with like with wards and side brushes and stuff. Even if it's, you know, the assassin taking a sweeper and you draft this really strong like mid jungle duo and you walk around with double sweeper and you sweep everything out and you try to get picks in the jungle, try to get ganks on mid lane, these sorts of things. Like if you get ahead, I think that can be like a pretty powerful strategy. But teams historically are slow to adapt to changes like this. Even if it's good, maybe we won't see it because teams have been playing like these control mages for so long. It was like you're talking about still seeing Sejuani, right? With Sejuani, you know, getting a lot of nerfs and how teams just tend to default to comfort. And I've played 150 scrims this season of Sejuani, so I'm going to play Sejuani, right? So that may slow it down. But I think, you know, if there were a time when you're going up against like these behemoths like Kingzone and like IG and whatnot, you're probably not going to beat them straight up in a standard game. So, you know, hey, what's a way that maybe you could beat them? Well, maybe if you can get a LeBlanc and smash lane against an Azir, maybe you can make something happen.
The most fun I've had watching League of Legends in the past like 2-3 years have been Misfits at Worlds going nuts with, you know, like all in bottom lanes during the time of Ardent Censor meta.
CLG at MSI.
CLG at MSI for sure with the huge comebacks. Gigabyte Marines with, you know, crazy early games and then very, very mobile mid games trying to continually, you know, make plays in different areas and stuff. So I definitely agree with you. Like, I want to see teams that have this pressure on them turn to innovation.
And I think, thinking about towards MSI, the timing of it makes that a little bit more possible because Team Liquid, Fnatic have 3.5 weeks, a month before group stage happens from the end of their regular season to try new stuff.
Whereas Fortnite.
Whereas, yeah, absolutely. They're going to be able to drop in the right zone. But, oh, God, come on. We can play League, Kobe. We can be good at it.
Sorry, that was a bad interruption.
The LPL teams won't be finishing their playoffs for about another week and a half, so they're going to have less time since they need to finish on patch 8.6, so maybe there's a chance you can sneak one in on IG. I got another Twitter question, actually. I like this one. We can't go into too much detail, but what are your sleeper power picks for each lane in solo queue on the live patch? This is from The Xantar.
And I loved this one so much that
we almost want to make it a repeatable segment.
I do want to. I want to make sleeper power picks one of our... repeatable segments.
Name.
And I have one for you that I usually look at Lowellytics, this stats website.
Are you gonna?
And one of the super low play rate, yet very high win rate things that came up, which, you know, a lot of these come up where people talked about Aurelion Soul Jungle or whatever a long time ago, and they're like, oh, there's like three people playing it on Smurfs or something, and so you could see it actually show up. But Kled Jungle showed up, and I was like, I'm gonna try that because I just love, you know, trying to be the hipster route and play stuff that other people aren't playing, so I can feel like a unique snowflake in the jungle. But it was actually good if you
Night Rush,
if you if you think about all the little quirks that he has. I don't think it'll be good if people start to see it and then they can try and take advantage. And like pressure the Kled because
so what are the successful quirks and unsuccessful quirks?
So Kled, one of the biggest things about Kled is that you cannot remount off of jungle monster damage.
Oh God!
So usually you can remount off of killing minions or damaging enemy champions, right? So that basically in your first clear as Kled, you have half of a health bar to work with.
So if you get harassed at all. Your game is
So you would definitely be in trouble if they come invade you or you take some damage level one or something. Because if you get demounted in the jungle by some jungle monsters, they could definitely demount you.
Yeah.
Then you're really slow walking around without your mount. And you just have this little like munchkin and you have the gun. That happened to me my first game testing it out. And I was like, oh, this is difficult to pull off. But then I started having the team protect me and just going, you know, buff one camp, second buff, and you can get your level three, and you just want to keep yourself high enough health that you don't get unmounted. Then it was actually insanely fun because you do go for a Tiamat rush. You can instantly clear stuff.
Your W helps you clear jungle really fast.
Yeah, he does insane damage, and he has a lot of mobility. Like, you can use the charge wherever you want, and his bear trap on a rope is actually very good for ganking. Plus, you have, like, the most annoying thing about Kled is always, you know, his demounting thing or whatever, so he pops you out of CC or stuff, or, like, and I'm a very like risk, high intensity risky jungler. Mm-hmm. So I go for a lot of, you know, plays like that where it's very helpful to have a passive, you know, like a Zac passive or a Kled passive or something. Mm-hmm. And it was actually super fun. I started winning a lot of games afterwards. I don't think like it's, you know, competitively viable or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking for something
that sleeper,
if you're looking for a sleeper power pick, and you take into account like you can't actually jump over walls with your charge, and you definitely don't want to get harassed early because you can't remount, then I think that that might be something for you.
Yeah, and I like this as like, hey, each episode bring one sleeper power pick. Okay. But what defines sleeper? And what defines power pick is because Nunu still has a low play rate. And
does
that
he?
Guy is, but compared to other junglers,
okay. He's
like one, he's probably like 10th most played jungler, like 12th most played jungler. Like, does that define sleeper? Or does he have to be like, you never see this guy in a game, but he's
actually. I just think, I don't know, something that you think is uncommon, I guess. It shouldn't always just be like us going down, what's a high win rate?
Yeah.
It's
funny because, I was actually going to say Kled, but for top, because I've been playing a lot of Kled. I actually think he's really good with Conqueror. And he's just super fun. So I started playing him just kind of for fun when I was leveling a new account, just messing around. But I actually love Kled now. And I do think the remount stuff is the most fun. Some of the most fun I've ever had in League. Like, people ganking you, using all their abilities to demount you, and then they don't realize that you can actually remount and 1v2 them and stuff. So,
yeah.
But since you went into most of the detail on that, I'll give you that. But Quinn top is my one that I've not seen a lot of people playing. I actually think Quinn top
might have to save these up.
Is insane.
You don't run out.
Well, I got one.
Okay.
Tell me about Quinn.
They'll do Quinn.
Quinn is just something that used to be seen more top lane, like as this like really kind of abusive pick in a melee matchups, and Quinn has kind of quietly like made its return to the top lane, and it's actually like one of the highest win rate picks. I have not been seeing it a lot. The amount of damage you can actually put out in lane is pretty absurd, and people are just going back straight to like lethality Quinn. It's feels almost impossible to lane against as most melee champions, like especially with a lot of people playing a lot of it like Aurelia and stuff like that. You can actually like kind of like vault him out of Aurelia out of the queue. And if you pull off plays like that, and it's the same thing with like, you know, Shen taunts and these sorts of things, you actually interrupt dashes with mm-hmm. it. And like, if you do
the
that,
the vault is so troll.
Yeah, it's actually so hard to play.
You ever
against.
Played Volibear against Quinn?
I don't know, maybe.
You're useless. Literally, so
it
at
cancels
first,
your Q, right?
It cancels your Q.
There's
on
a reason
Volibear.
Not that many people
you
play
can
Volibear.
Never flip him. In development, I remember this. In development, I actually played a lot of Volibear jungler because this was like back in 2012 or 2013. And they're like, oh man, that feels really bad for the Quinn. Whenever, you know, she's just not good against Volibear because Volibear's running the wards. You can't vault because he'll just flip you. I'm like, yeah, but if you make it have a mini stun, then Volibear's useless. So like, that's fine. It's just, oh, I hated that. I got one.
Okay.
It's Ivern jungle. And I know that has been meta in the past, but specifically, it's all about just finding the right items to abuse. This is mm-hmm. where I've found like my niche power picks. Previously, everyone was like, oh yeah, Ivern's the Ardent sensor guy. It's not about that anymore. It's about, I go Guardian on him to get the resolve stuff with Font of Life, as well as Revitalize to increase your heal and shield power. Then I go Domination secondary and go Zombie Ward and Genius Hunter. So, did you know, Zyrene talks about this all the time, but in Genius Hunter, the active item cooldown thing also decreases the cooldown of your trinkets.
Mm-hmm.
So you can spam a bunch more wards with Ivern. Then all these items that have actives that are actually kind of OP all work on Ivern. So you still rush Redemption, then you go Twin Shadows, then you go Reverie, and then you also get to go Zeke's for your late game AD carry buff. And there's so much power in all those items, and you can use them like every 30 seconds if you stack up your Ingenious Huntress. So I actually have a lot of fun with it, being able to support people with the active item spam Ivern. You can change up your ordering. If you're really far ahead, you rush Twin Shadows because then you're just catching people. Usually Redemption's huge. If your AD carry's big, you move your Zeke's earlier into the build. If it's an even game, you move your Reverie earlier in the build so you can navigate your way in and out of fights. It's actually really fun having all those active items. And like Ivern's the only champion that can actually build all of them, has the income to get them early, and can feel good about it. So
cool.
Do it up.
I went back to look since there were a bunch of bug fixes and buffs for Quinn on 8-6.
Yeah.
To look at them all since you brought it up. Because I remember when I saw them, I was like, oh, those sound all like really good, feel-good things. Mm-hmm. Have you played it since 8.6? Because this is saying things like your ult is not interrupted. You don't get kicked out of it by minions anymore.
That's when I played it. That's when I started playing it.
It marks everybody now. Like, that's a huge burst of damage. Yeah, so...
Yep, you can ult, you go, you can get a mark, then you can vault for a mark and stuff. Like, it's actually pretty insane.
Looks pretty good.
There's also, like, even against... I actually think Fleet Footwork is super underrated on a lot of those champions. Mm-hmm. Like, I know a lot of people like going Electrocute and whatnot, but, like, I've played some range stuff top, and Fleet actually feels really nice because... like range minion aggro actually is pretty significant. Like whether you're playing a Teemo or you're playing Quinn or these sorts of things, you actually take a lot of damage from that. But having even just something like Fleet Footwork is often enough sustain to like negate any of the little kind of harass that can be traded back. Mm-hmm. And it can allow you to just like consistently auto, like going in and out of the bush, dropping aggro, and you can get a lot of punishment.
All right, got time for a final Twitter question. And all this, right. Azale, this may be my favorite Twitter question of all time. Yeah.
I can't wait.
Harry Cliff, Mr. Klaus Anderson says, at right Kobe, at right Azale. We never got any post-game chat about NALCS Civil War on the Dive LOL. What did you guys think about stomping Kobe in less than 20 minutes?
Ooh, I think it felt good.
Yeah, we haven't really talked. It was under 20 minutes, too. Yeah. That's the important part.
And the Rift Herald danced.
The Rift Herald did dance at the end of that game.
The only time I've seen that otherwise in competitive was Khan actually playing Nastus in Fnatic. That's the only time I remember that game
took longer to complete than our Civil War.
So really what you can take away is since I top lane and Khan top lanes and I did it faster...
Did you play Nasus?
No, I didn't.
Kobe,
I mean, Kobe just great. Looks not happy.
You should go watch the NALCS Civil War if you haven't.
Or
specifically
don't.
The 19 and a half minutes of the game.
Yeah. That was really fun.
So I have not played Warwick since that match because it just felt like the dumbest thing where Camille support with her E just completely overrides my ultimate because you're unstoppable, but that doesn't matter because as soon as you end the ultimate, the stun applies.
Yeah.
So like I tried to ult him.
There was a
pivotal moment here. Jack goes top.
I remember.
He doesn't get a. You guys don't get a kill on the Clay.
I pressure the top lane.
You don't get anything.
And you have that tree before a Drake.
So I do the Infernal. I get an Infernal Dragon for it, and then I'm going to turn bottom lane.
You
and like save our bottom lane, who's getting pressured by the double melees, and Pigeon is with me on the Anivia. So we have four people converging on two. And I ult over to the Camille, and he just stuns me out of it, and they just kill me right there. And then everybody, like, walks away. So, like, you guys get kills on the bottom side, too, out of, like, a situation that should have been completely ours. And that just tilted the shit out of me.
Wait,
I'm not done ranting. There's one more. People were flaming me for, like, Warwick ulting over the wall past Wild Turtle.
Okay.
Thinking I was trying to hit him. I was trying to run away from the 9-kill Yasuo. I wasn't trying to engage him.
Correct.
That is all. Now I'm done ranting. Go ahead.
Wild Turtle opened my eyes.
Solo
into...
killed Darius a couple times. Got a lot of turrets.
I killed his tail. That's good enough.
Yeah.
You did,
I died once to Pigeon / Jensen because I was shopping. Other than that, I just shielded Wild Turtle. Wild Turtle opened my eyes into how amazing Ivern is with Yasuo. Like, I know he's a good melee enabler, but he is insane with Yasuo. So if I'm ever in solo queue and someone locks in Yasuo, boom, Ivern, right there. He's already super good. You just shield him with the E.
Daisy
to slow
can
down.
Give him the
Daisy
knock
can
up.
Give him his ultimate. The Q is already a good melee enabler. It puts Yasuo right next to him without even having to expend his dash. It's insane.
Yeah.
It's and really then good. Also when he's like killing people level one, it helps.
I think the Camille support was also pretty good.
Smoothie balled out.
Smoothie's nuts.
It's probably just because he like pooped on me personally, but I was very impressed.
He was really good.
Smoothie's good.
The interaction that you're talking about with the Warwick ult, it's funny because oftentimes the newer the champion is, the more priority it has in these interactions.
It's a basic ability for Camille, man. That's my ultimate.
So like even because that was one of the things I was actually complaining about when Camille was in development was playing against it as Shen. If I taunted towards the Camille and he hookshots towards me,
he
not get taunted. Like, it stops my taunt, I don't deal the damage, and I get stunned and interrupted. So
what
like,
about Body Slam?
Body Slam, I feel like Camille's hookshot takes priority over almost everything.
So I was doing some
I'm not sure specifically about
with Cyrene between Alistar and Gragas.
Yeah.
And it was inconsistent. Like, if you're headbutting a Gragas while Gragas is body slamming towards him, like, eh?
Yeah.
Either you're going to interrupt or you're going to get hit away. So sometimes it's weird like that. But you did get destroyed on, Warwick.
Never playing him again.
Free.
Yeah. I was asking Kobe for Warwick tips like a week before the game. And he was like, I'll tell you after the match.
And then you're like, nah, I don't need him anymore. No, never mind.
I did ask him for Warwick tips. I want to learn that champ.
Yeah.
But
you don't
need
to. He's stupid.
He's stupid and he sucks.
He's dumb. I should have played Shaco.
Yeah.
You should have. I thought you were going to play it. I almost banned it, but the team was like, we should probably ban Swain just in case they're going to try hard.
We banned USA.
Yeah. We banned USA. Yeah. And you banned Uder and Nunu.
Yeah.
The target bans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he overcame with his pocket pick, Ivern.
Yes.
Yeah, it didn't matter.
Didn't matter. Steel Red, invade bot. All right, you should go watch that.
Least favorite question of all time.
Yeah.
Good question.
It was. Thank you for that question.
Great question, in fact. That was really good. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
Favorite question of all time.
Yeah.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Dive. Thank you guys for watching. Remember, we are going to be taking a little bit of a break. We'll be back with our MSI preview episode. I believe we are shooting that on May 7th.
Mm-hmm.
We will tweet out the exact release details when we have them. Also, remember, ask us questions on Twitter. Thank you for so many questions. I tweeted out this morning for questions, got like 150.
That's a lot.
Which allowed me to get our favorite question of all time as well, which we didn't have before that tweet. So thanks again. Stay tuned on MSI Updates and see you then.